Blog Talk Radio.
Edition, this season 10 premiere edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast on this 2nd of September 2017. I'm your host, Cyril Joe Quinn, taking you for the next hour as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to Instagram and follow me at Rillo Gerald Quinn. Happy to be with you back for another season. Year 10 of the program. Of course, we started off back in 2008. I believe the date, if I'm not mistaken, was October 18th, 2008. That was our first show on Blog Talk Radio. Been with them ever since. And, you know, the program is going through, of course, a number of name changes. Same people, but different names. Whether it was, you know, the Cyril Joe Quinn, the Saturday morning, the Saturday morning show, the Cyril Joe Quinn, the Cyril Joe Quinn Review, the Cyril Quinn Review. I mean, we've gone through, 12, 11 sports talk, gone through a number of name changes, but we are now settled into the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. I think that one's going to stick for a long time and for a while. Again, happy to be back with you for season 10 of the program. And it's just not a better way to kick off the season premiere of this program on a Saturday morning. Our original day, and we used to do the program every Saturday with some good old-fashioned college football, and frankly, the most anticipated opening matchups to open the season in the recent memory, in the history of college football, let's be honest, in terms of Florida State and Alabama. Alabama coming in number one, a familiar perch. Florida State ranked number three. You have, the teacher versus the student versus, teacher versus the student in terms of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. We know Jimbo Fisher, of course, used to be assistant coach for Saban back in LSU, won a championship, helped them win a championship back in 2007 when they took out Oklahoma. And let's be honest, Saban has had his way with ex assistant coaches. These games haven't even been close. The average margin, I believe is like been something like 40-10. And they've won all the games by at least 14 points. So Saban has had his way against his ex-assistant coaches, that is. But this one is a little different. Because, you look at some of the teams that that Alabama has played over the course of their openers. Look at some of their openers that they played over the course of the last 8 or 9 years. Taking out Virginia Tech, West Virginia, USC last year, Virginia Tech, Michigan a couple years ago, Wisconsin. So they played some good teams, but they have never played a team on the level of Florida State to open the season. I mean, that's all there is to it. Florida State, in the Nick Saban, in the Jimbo Fisher era, which started back in, 2010, Florida State has gone toe-to-toe with Alabama as far as recruiting. And, you know, listen, it's been Alabama has been the dominant program, you know, since basically a year after Nick Saban's first year, since 2008, it's been Alabama. Over the last 10 years, I mean, Alabama has dominated the sport unlike any other team without going, you know, without question. You know, the four national championships, playoff appearances, you know, they've been in the playoffs all 3 years since the inception of this new 14 playoff that came about in 2014. But Florida State, you know, you want to go through that next level of teams behind Alabama, because it's been Alabama and everybody else. Florida State has been near or at the top of that second group of teams that have been, that can physically challenge Alabama man for man, talent for talent. Like, this is not going to be a case where Alabama is going to overwhelm Florida State with talent. Again, these two teams, in terms of recruiting, you look at the last 5 years, four of the last 5 years has been, you know, 1-2, 1-3, 1-2, 2-1, 1-4, and 1-4, with Alabama, you know, of course, being ranked number one most of the majority of times. But Florida State, again, second in 2012, third in 2014, second in 2015, number one 2016, number four last year. So there's going to be a lot of talent on the field, a lot of athletes, big time athletes on the field. Again, opening up the Mercedes-Benz Dome, that new beautiful stadium in Atlanta, the home which will be the home of course, the Atlanta Falcons. Couldn't find a better way to open up the college football season. We'll talk more about the game as the program goes along. Some of the key matchups. I listen, there's one question I feel that will decide this matchup, and that is, can Florida State block Alabama? It's just that simple. And again, I don't want to hear about how many players Alabama has lost to the NFL. Alabama does not, they replenish, reload better than anyone. They have, you know, you want to call it a matter of chemistry, and they want to talk about, you know, knocking, you know, leadership and how many leaders they have. The bottom line is they have the talent. So the talent is still there. That cupboard, you know, they still have pros up and down the board. The question would be, can Florida State block Alabama and keep DeAndre Francois, you know, standing straight up? That would be the question to me that will determine the fate of Florida State and what happens in this particular matchup. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition, season 10 premiere of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. A lot to talk about here. Some other good matchups in college football that we can get to. A number of things going on in the world of sports over the course of this week. Of course, you still have the devastation of Hurricane Harvey as the rain has subsided, but it will take years and years of trying to rebuild the city of Houston. We'll talk more about that as well on this edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this last edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Of course, this is really the true opening weekend of the college football season. I know they had some games last week that frankly nobody cared about, let's be honest. Last night, Washington took out Rutgers. I know after a sloppy first half, really a bad first three quarters, had a big fourth quarter and took out Rutgers. Same Washington team. I mean, Washington is a very good defensive team. Offensively, they have some issues. I've never been in love with the quarterback. I don't think he's a pro quarterback in terms of Browning. So I don't see Washington as a major player this year in terms of competing for a national championship, or even with, you know, they'll be in the mix for the Pac-12, but they're not as good as they were last year. Lost a lot of starters on defense. Lost a lot of overall talent. And again, I'm just not in love with the quarterback. I mean, the quarterback is just, you know, he's okay. He's a guy who, again, in college is who makes some plays. We know he can move around the pocket, but not a great thrower of the football whatsoever. So you had that. You had Thursday night. We had Ohio State, Indiana. Ohio State did not look good in that game, despite running away with that game in the second half, 49-21. Again, opening week, and this is a weekend. We'll do a couple college picks. This is a weekend where you could see some upsets. A lot of these teams, you know, you got a lot of teams still trying to figure themselves out. And a lot of times you get these opening weekend upsets. Now, again, I don't think you're going to see anything on the level of Appalachian State Michigan. And this is the 10th anniversary of the Appalachian State Michigan. Just won a great college football, won a great regular season upsets in the history of college football. I don't think you're going to see anything that devastating. But you'll see some minor upsets here and there. Again, I did not like how Ohio State looked in that game against Indiana. Maybe Indiana is just, maybe it comes out, it turns out that Indiana may be just better than what, you know, we're giving them credit for. But Ohio State's offense looks very spotty in that opening game against Indiana. Again, opening game Thursday night. You can't say it's a situation where they're not prepared. I mean, they've had the entire offseason prepared for it, so it's not an issue of rest. Versus in the normal case of that it would be on a if you were in season playing a Thursday night game, so that's not an issue at all. Again, their offense just did not look good at all. But again, I expect Ohio State is who's ranked number two is expected to be one of the contenders for the college football playoff, and they'll be right there as usual. Some headlines, some Saturday headlines. Clayton Kershaw is back. He improves to 16-2 on the season and certainly will be the NL winner for the Cy Young Award, despite missing a lot of time, basically the entire month of August. August with an injury. He's been so by far the best pitcher in the league. With playing on a team that's 51 games over 500, he's going to win the another Cy Young Award. He probably blew his chance. I thought, to be honest with you, he was on pace to win the MVP as well. I thought that was really on the table. I know, you know, the NL MVP is up for grabs because, you know, Giancarlo Stanton has the best numbers. But he's on a team that's not going to make the playoffs and that will struggle to be even 500. I know Votto, Paul Goldschmidt, you know, the Colorado guy, Blackman's had a big year. But that award for NL MVP is completely up for grabs. I expect Altuve out of Houston to win the AL award for AL MVP. I thought that Kershaw had a legit chance at winning NL MVP. Had he stayed healthy. But the most important thing for the Dodgers is that he's back. They snapped their five-game-long losing streak, which is amazing when you think about it. In a year where they were on pace to win over 115 games, that they could have a five-game losing streak but still be 51 games over 500. Kershaw goes about six innings, threw about 75 pitches, didn't give up any runs, and looked like his usual dominant self. And, you know, if you're the Dodgers, all you want, you're just trying to get him to the postseason as healthy as possible. It's not about how many starts he makes. It's about just getting him, nursing him to the postseason so he can be fully healthy. And the Dodgers will try to make a run to the World Series. They're going to be overwhelming favorites to get to and win the World Series. There's no two ways about it. So the Dodgers get him back. He's sharp. And they take out the Padres 1-0. Sheldon Richardson traded to the Seattle Seahawks from the New York Jets. One of these rare trades that the NFL makes. Trades are very rare in the NFL, let alone like right before the season. So again, the Jets. This is just continue. You know, Seattle is just the beneficiaries of Jet chaos and disorganization, and also the Jet just trying to get rid of every player known to man that's making any money. I still think Richardson can play. I think if he's one of these guys where he will get lost on a team that has no culture and whose culture is toxic, bad organization, bad ownership. You put him with a winning culture, Seattle. We know what Seattle has done over the last 5 or 6 years with the ownership, Pete Carroll, the back-to-back Super Bowl appearances, winning one of them. I think he'll be a player for Seattle. He will flourish as a Seattle Seahawk this year. Maybe he doesn't get back to the player that he once was, but he will do some good things for that team. Again, you take a guy out of a culture that's toxic, it makes a big difference, especially in the NFL. Saints wide receiver Willie Snead suspended 3 games of the season, first 3 games of the season for, of course, the off-the-field stuff with the DUI. And the suspension was reduced from 4 games to 3, but still 3 games is a nice chunk of the season, almost a fourth of the season. Again, another player in the NFL who just gets caught doing something just completely stupid. So Willie Snead is a good, pretty good player. He's a good player, not a great player, but a good player for the Saints. He's suspended for the first 3 games of the season. So there are some of your Saturday headlines as we on this 2nd of September. March still a ways away here, or has come and gone. This 2nd of September 2017 as we close out summer. The official, last weekend, Labor Day coming up on Monday. Everybody will be back in school. As you know, I've seen over the past, 3 weeks, people have been, especially down here in the DMV, one school goes back this week, another school goes back that last week, another school will be back next week. So everybody seemingly in the country will be back in school September 5th, day after Labor Day, and the summer will be basically unofficially over. You can already start to feel some of the weather right now with some of these temperatures going, in the 50s and, cool nights, cool mornings, cool nights. But, can't complain about the weather. How it's been, especially down here, the last couple of days, low 80s, early 70s. Again, can't really complain about that. Should be a nice, beautiful Memorial Labor Day weekend. I don't know if you can say Memorial Day, but Labor Day weekend as we unofficially close summer. And, before you know it, 5 days away from the NFL kicking off with New England. And with New England, Kansas City, of course, next week we'll do some NFL stuff next week. We'll do a program before that game to kind of kick off the NFL season. Thanks to Javon offer earlier in the week to join us, gave us some NFL stuff on the season. So we'll continue to preview the NFL. And I'll say this, and I said this on the podcast about a month ago. The enthusiasm for the NFL is not what it was, nowhere even close to what it has been in past years. Not even close. I'll tell you, I'm telling you right now, just the hype, the anticipation, it's just not there. Now, maybe, you listen, and I would say this even before Hurricane Harvey took over the nation as far as the number one story in the country, and continues to be. But even before that, again, I just don't feel the sense that the NFL has a lot of momentum coming into the season. And again, we're only 5 days away. It's not, you know, this is not mid-July. It's not early August. It's September 2nd. You know, New England, Kansas City will, New England will host Kansas City on September 7th on Thursday night. Not that, you know, right around the corner. So I just don't feel that the NFL is in a good place right now going into its 97th season. We'll talk more about, and, you know, there's a broadcaster that actually agrees with me. We'll talk more about that and much, much more coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Three four seven two one five six one eight zero on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast, our 10th season. Amazingly, it's been 10 years and so many, well over 500 programs that we've done, or podcast programs that we've done over the course of the last 10 years. Spending the majority of them outside of a brief stint outside of Blog Talk Radio, but the majority, about 99% of our 98% of our episodes have been with Blog Talk Radio, and thanks to them. And it's just amazing not only how much our program has grown over the course of the last 10 years, but how about Blog Talk Radio? I mean, there was a time where, you know, I could put in for a program and, you know, get my face basically featured on the homepage of Blog Talk Radio as a featured show. Amazingly, now that is not the case. No matter, no doubt, now that certainly is not the case, because you have so many shows, so many celebrities, so many people have gravitated towards this station and this you know, this platform in order to get their voice heard and or get their story told. It is remarkable the amount of growth. I will be curious to know what the numbers are in terms of how many programs Blog Talk Radio had in 2008 versus how many programs they have now. I would say that just offhand that it has grown in the thousands, probably tens of thousands in terms of how many programs. I mean, you go on the website, they have shows about everything. I mean, everything. So credit towards Blog Talk Radio for creating a forum that, you know, allows somebody like me to do what you love, do what I love, and, you know, nothing's gonna be perfect. You know, we could talk about, you know, sound and things of that nature. No form of technology is perfect. But I have to give Blog Talk Radio just a lot of credit for creating this. Who knew that, you know, 10 years ago, looking for something to speak of your opinion and talk to your voice and use your voice, that Blog Talk Radio would basically be kind of like not started this, because there was podcasting before, but, you know, Blog Talk Radio is kind of taking podcasting to another level. And you've seen other forms of, you know, whether it is Facebook Live and YouTube, you see other people follow and copy some of the things that Blog Talk Radio has done, and to their credit. So hats off and shout out, you know, certainly to Blog Talk Radio and the job they've done. I'm looking at, this is a perfect segue towards what I was going to talk about next. I'm looking at, as I watch, you know, ESPN College Football Game Day, but Hurricane Harvey, you know, people are talking about Hurricane Harvey, and rightfully so. Again, I know that, you know, everybody wants to donate, everybody wants to help out. A lot of people wants to help out, but you got to be very, very cognizant, very careful of where you donate your money to. Now, the Red Cross, we know the Red Cross is the number one as far as in terms of donations, and they're the biggest name. But listen, there, I've read some stories and just heard some things about the Red Cross, and that would make me nervous before I would donate money. And it's not just so much money coming out of your pocket, which is always important. Everybody needs their money, but it's about where is the money going to go, and how can you be just all the way? How can we know 1,000% sure? How can we be 1,000% sure that the money's going to go to the right places, to the right place? Like, you want the money going to the people. You want the money going to, you know, rebuild, you know, food, shelter, clothes. So, again, the Red Cross, again, they garner the assets. The Red Cross, they get the money, but how that money gets deployed, and does all of it reach the people? That's a different story and a whole other question. Because there have been some horror stories, especially about Haiti. You know, in terms of how much money was raised versus how much money actually reached the countries, and how much rebuilding has been afforded to Haiti because of that money. And those numbers of the money that was raised versus the money that Haiti actually got, those numbers have not equaled out. I'll just leave it at that. Because it will take years, not months, not days, not months, but it will take years to recover from this for the city of Houston. They're talking about the largest rainstorm in the history of this country, over 52 inches of rain over the course of basically, what, 3 or 4 days? And now you hear about the fact that many of the people, of the victims, of the flood victims, did not have flood insurance. And again, that is something that money, you know, some of the money could go towards, paying for, possibly. So again, if you donate, that's one thing. I'm not telling anybody not to donate money, but just, again, do your research. Be careful who you donate to. I would do extensive research on the organization that I'm donating to. The Red Cross is not the only organization that has the means to help out the people in Houston. They're not. There are plenty of organizations out there. It's just a matter of knowing where your money is going, and knowing that your money, more importantly, knowing that your money is going to reach Houston and is going to reach the people. Because that's the most important thing. Is the money actually reaching the people? 347-215-6180. On this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We're going to come back and do some NBA here. I know it's a big football weekend, big college football weekend, but the NBA has, let's be honest, the NBA has been the story for most of this year and continuously into this summer, and that did not change over the course of this week. We'll talk some NBA, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. To call them on the special edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward were introduced to the Boston Celtics this week. A long press conference, about 33 minutes. I didn't listen to the entire thing, but I did catch a couple snippets of it in regards to Kyrie Irving. In regards to, in particular, to Kyrie Irving, I didn't really have any interest in what Gordon Hayward had to say, all due respect to him. But, you know, it's interesting with Kyrie Irving. So you look at Kyrie, you look at Kyrie Irving, and now, you know, it's amazing now, like a guy who is clearly one of the top 10 to 12 players in the league, a guy who's won a championship, a guy who hit one of the great clutch shots in finals history. Okay, that shot he made against Golden State in the 2000 in the game 7 2016 is one of the great clutch shots in the NBA history in the finals ever. You know, they called the play for him, so that's the kind of regard that he's thought of. And now he's just, you know, he's gone from that to one dimensional. He's not a franchise player. Listen, Kyrie Irving is a tremendous player. Does he play defense? No. But that's about 85% of the league doesn't play defense. Okay. What he can do offensively, he is as good as offensive point guard that this league has ever seen when you look at his total skill set offensively. Okay. Scoring the basketball, ball handling, shooting, finishing at the rim. How many point guards in the history of the sport had a combination of being able to finish at the rim, shoot the ball at the level, and have that combination that Kyrie Irving has offensively? So, again, you know, people say, well, he's not a franchise player. He doesn't have to be a dominant franchise player on a team when you have as much talent as the Boston Celtics have. The Celtics, remember, they still have Gordon Hayward, who's an all-star. They still have Al Horford, who's a borderline all-star. They still have, you know, a bevy of young talent, talented guys who are going to get better. Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, the rookie. They still have some draft picks coming up. They still have some draft picks, future draft picks. So, again, you're not, like, Kyrie Irving was not, you're not bringing Kyrie Irving to be the savior of the franchise here. He is their best player, but not by a lot. And, again, I feel like, you know, in Brad Stevens' system, and Brad Stevens, all due respect to Tyronn Lue, Brad Stevens will be by far the best coach that Kyrie Irving has ever had at the NBA level, by far. So I think he goes from bad defensive player to a good team defensive player. Because he has the ability to play defense. He has, I mean, it's just a want to. He has the ability. He just doesn't try. He doesn't try hard on defense. He physically, I mean, guy's 6'3", over 200 pounds. He can physically fight through screens and has enough athleticism to play defense. He just doesn't try hard on defense. So it's a matter of want. It's a matter of want more than it is anything in regards to him not playing defense. But again, I was just blown away by it. All of a sudden, you know, he's not this, he's not that. I'm like, have you watched him in the finals the last 2 years against Steph Curry? I mean, please, right? Like, this dude is lethal offensively. He's a lethal offensive player, tremendous offensive player. Again, putting him in a structured system with quality coaching. And remember, he's only 25 years old, so he's only going to get better. He's only going to get better. And again, I'm not knocking Cleveland. Cleveland got as much as you did a great job in terms of what they were able to get for a guy who, in essence, forced a trade. Now, we'll see how healthy Isaiah Thomas is. Jay Crowder is a good player. He'll do a good job for them. Has a great contract. That draft pick, which was the key part of the deal, maybe they can flip that draft pick into a player at the All-Star break. Who knows? Maybe Paul George is not happy in Oklahoma City. You can flip that. You're telling me Oklahoma City wouldn't trade Paul George for that number one pick, that 2018 Nets pick? I think they would. But we're getting far ahead of ourselves. But I'm saying Cleveland did well for themselves. In terms of that trade. So both teams should be happy. But the big thing about this is how Kyrie Irving played this, and he played it. He played this like as perfectly as you can play a situation. Not only does he get out of Cleveland, and now basically in essence, not only does he get out of Cleveland, he goes to a team that, you know, one of the crown jewel franchises in the NBA, is in sports history, in terms of the Boston Celtics. All right, they're going to be in the playoffs next year. They're going to be competing to get to, along with Cleveland, to get to the finals. Like, you couldn't play this any better than what Kyrie Irving did play. It was like a little finger before this episode, before the season finale, of course. A little finger met his demise, but he played this. Kyrie Irving played this as well as you can possibly play it. Now, there will be some of those who knock him. Why are you running away from LeBron? This thing was bigger than LeBron James. It was much bigger than him just getting away from LeBron James. It's bigger than that. But it played a role in that. And Kyrie Irving knew by seemingly crossing LeBron James that would guarantee that he would be traded. Because you think about this, and this is how the NBA versus other leagues, how much power these players have in 2017. Kyrie Irving had no leverage to get traded, let alone getting traded to a team like the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving has 2 years left on his contract. Okay? 2 years left on his contract. He had no leverage. None. To force this deal. This deal would never, in any other sport, this deal is not, like, it's not happening in any other sport. Not in football, not in hockey, not in baseball. This deal does not happen in any of the four major sports. But again, NBA players have more power than any, by far, have the most power of any of their colleagues from the other sports, athletes from the other sports. It's not even close. You force a trade and you have 2 years left on your contract. I mean, Cleveland easily could have said, you know what? You and LeBron, figure it out. But you're committed to us for the next 2 years. or at least at worst for at least the next year, maybe the following year you'll be on an expiring contract, so you know you have a little bit more leverage then. But 2 years left. And, you know, listen, LeBron James, for all his greatness, for all his, you know, like his status as probably the world's most powerful athlete, and, you know, he's, like, for all things that he's done, that he continues to do off the field as well, and I don't want to ever discount what he does off the court, because it shouldn't be. I mean, guys giving donates hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of scholarship money, and hasn't even barely, I don't know if he's ever gotten a parking ticket. So he's been, you know, we talk about guys getting suspended for DUIs and doing, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's of the world. LeBron James has been the polar opposite in terms of how he's carried himself off, on and off the field. But I tell you what, like LeBron James, for a guy who's as famous as LeBron James, I've never seen an athlete in my life crave attention as much as LeBron James craves attention. I mean, the Twitter rants, the uninterrupted Bleacher Report, you know, the working out videos. I mean, it's one thing after another with LeBron James. Like, and it comes to a point where it's like, yes, we clearly get that you love being LeBron James, but you're gonna be a billionaire. You're gonna join Tiger Woods. You're gonna join Michael Jordan. You're gonna join, you know, Floyd Mayweather as the only athletes ever to accumulate $1 billion in terms of salaries and endorsements combined. He's gonna join that list, and maybe in the next 2 or 3 years. I don't get why he feels the need to draw attention to himself at every waking moment. I don't get it. I mean, the idea that you're going on Twitter, you know, posting your highlights and saying, you know, posting basically trying to remind us of how great you are. I mean, please. I mean, it's enough already. I mean, just sit down somewhere. Also, the Lakers completely deserve to be fined by the NBA just on stupidity alone. I know a lot of people are talking about, well, the evidence wasn't there and, you know, how could it have been proven? Listen, all you had to do was go watch the Jimmy Magic Johnson interview with Jimmy Kimball. That alone was enough to warrant tampering. That alone. And, you know, if you're Magic Johnson, if you are Rob Pelinka, these guys have been in the league forever. Magic, you've been around the league for 30 plus years. Rob Pelinka, dude, you've been an agent. You were Kobe Bryant's agent. You were part of the Fab Five in 93. You've been in the league well over 20 years. You know what, like, you should know the game by now. Like, yeah, I mean, these are not, you know, rookies. Guys who don't have NBA experience in terms of what, you know, what the league is like and how the league functions. Again, the Lakers are lucky. $500,000 is nothing. The Lakers are lucky that they didn't have to forfeit draft picks for this, or the NBA could have hit them with the, you know what, you're not allowed to sign Paul George. How about that? I mean, that would have been a Roger Goodell NFL move. You know what? We're going to eliminate you from signing Paul George altogether. So the Lakers are fortunate that they got a slap on the wrist at that, if you wouldn't even call it a slap on the wrist. And like $500,000 is nothing to an organization that's worth over $1 billion. So a couple of billion. But again, if you're Magic Johnson, you're Rob Pelinka, just sit down somewhere. Sit down. Like, we get it. You're the Lakers. You're gonna have cap space. You don't have to sell Los Angeles. You don't have to sell the position yet, because you have a possible budding star in Lonzo Ball that everybody's going to want to play with. You have plenty of things that are going to sell the Lakers to free agents. and you know a guy, you know the guy wants to come there. He's from Los Angeles. I mean, just sit down somewhere. I had no problem. I had zero problem with the Lakers getting fined, getting charged with tampering, because it was tampering. The Lakers were just dumb enough to get caught. Three four seven two one five 6180 is the call number. When we return, a broadcaster calls it quits, and the game of the century, another game of the century. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of Zero Joe Quinn's Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. It's season 10 premiere edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. So we're going to, this is not probably going to be the regular time we do our football shows, our weekend shows. We're going to move it around between Saturday and Sunday. Well, because, you know, Sunday is a great day to do the football show because of, you know, being able to break down the preview of the NFL, the weekend, the Sunday of the NFL, and also to look back at Saturday, at Saturday action with college football. So we'll do some Sunday programs as well. But of course, this is the 10th anniversary of our program. October 18, 2008 was the very first program that we did. And I went back and listened to some of it, the beginning of the program. That's, of course, we didn't even have there was no Skype, there was no headset, no computer. It was me basically on, well, there was a headset. It was me basically on a cell phone with a plug-in, you know, some headphones that you plug, that you can plug into your phone. So we've come a long way since 2008. And I believe we were talking AL, I was talking American League Championship Series with Tampa Bay, Boston. The year, of course, that, like, the year where, of course, Philadelphia Phillies won the World Series. So that's, so yeah, a lot has changed since 2008. Again, we continue to like to thank Blog Talk Radio for providing us this platform to speak, to talk about the world of sports and pop culture. So Ed Cunningham, formerly of ESPN, and did a lot of games, of course. College football, worked with Mike Patrick, who's been around forever. Mike Patrick was doing games when I was a kid, so he's been around. He's and continues still doing games, amazingly. Ed Cunningham decides to walk away from ESPN and from football broadcasting after about 10 years that he'd been doing this. 48 years old, had a great job, and frankly, and it's not a lot of things I like about ESPN, but Ed Cunningham was, you know, a good player, a good color commentator. He was very good, was not afraid to call teams out, not afraid to call coaches out, and just basically said, and if you want to read it, it's a New York Times article, basically said that he was fed up with, you know, with the physicality in football in terms of guys with CTE, concussions, some of the stuff that was happening was in football, and basically was, I felt guilty about being a part of it. Here's a quote that says it all to me, and just jumps out. This is from a New York Times article earlier this week. I take full ownership of my alignment with the sport. I can just no longer be in that cheerleader's spot. That is just a powerful statement. from the standpoint of, you know, feeling guilty because you are broadcasting the sport. I've never heard anything like it. He's walking away from a six-figure salary, and he mentioned it over the course of the article. Hey, compared to what he's making versus how much work he has to put in, it doesn't compare. I mean, he's doing something he loves. He's making six figures. Not a lot of time has to go into, so not a lot of, college football season is not long. You're doing games from basically from August to December. So anybody in the broadcast business knows how special these jobs are. They're guys that you have never heard of who would give their right arm and leg to have that job that Ed Cunningham just walked away from. So when you see somebody, that just tells you all you need to know about how he feels about how passionate he is about the sport and about the direction of the sport. And again, it's something that we've talked about over the last month or so in a podcast about where the NFL is going and what the NFL, like what in terms of the direction and what the sport may look like in 5 to 10 years. Now, I don't believe that it will get to a point to where there will be no NFL. I don't believe that. I would have to see it to believe it. But again, the sport is not in a good place right now. And you got a broadcaster walking away from a six-figure salary. Now, again, he played in the NFL, played in college, played in the NFL, was a close friend of Dave Duerson, who we remember, the great Chicago Bear safety that committed suicide back in 2011 due to a lot of concussion, CTE. And we've seen guys who have committed suicide post-career in their, following their careers due to the brain trauma, maybe due to the brain trauma of CTA. So maybe, I guess, he felt guilty that he was contributing towards the sport. I would love to interview him. I'm just finding it fascinating, that guy. And again, I don't think it's not his fault. Like, his job was to broadcast the games. I don't feel like if you're a broadcaster that you contribute to the physicality or contribute to what's wrong with pro football or college football. I don't think that's the case at all. But apparently, there was something in his heart, something in his soul that didn't feel right with doing these games, And again, I gotta give him credit from the standpoint he's walking away. I'm sure he has other sources of income, but he is walking away from a six-figure salary at 48 years old. Basically in his broadcast prime. I mean, this guy, like, who knows what the future could have held for Ed Cunningham moving forward? Good at his job, was not winning. And keep this in mind. And this was an article. This was an article too. ESPN fired a number of people over the course of this year. He could have been one of them, but they thought enough of him to keep him around. So that lets you know, because somebody fires Ed Cunningham, I don't think fans, me, you are going to stop watching the games because of a broadcaster losing his job. So that lets you know how much they thought about him, thought of him, and how well respected he is in the field of broadcasting. So I think that the sport is not in a good place right now, and that that's something that I didn't think I would ever see a broadcaster walking away from a job of that magnitude because of the direction of the sport. 347-215-6180 is the call number. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is the Cyril Joe Sports Podcast. Of course, this is getting lost, not to get lost in this weekend of college football. It will be, of course, tomorrow night. Well, it depends on when you want to watch it, either tomorrow night or early Sunday morning, the season finale of Power, which, you know, I was talking to somebody about it a couple of days ago. I understand they had to do it as far as television ratings, because Game of Thrones was going to destroy everybody, everything that came on last Sunday night. Game of Thrones did, and again, these numbers are just ridiculous. 12 million people watched Game of Thrones on a paid cable network, which is just insane. Game of Thrones is approaching Walking Dead level as far as popularity in terms of their numbers. I was looking at some numbers the other day as a comparison. Now, Walking Dead has had years where they've done 13, 14, 15 million in terms of the individual episodes over the course of their the show's lifespan. Game of Thrones next year, I predict that Game of Thrones next year, or maybe in 2019, depending on when they come back, who knows, they're only going to have 6 episodes. They're going to be doing anywhere from 15 to 20 million people watching that show. I guarantee it, especially if they don't come back in 2018 and don't come back to early 2019. Either way, they're going to be approaching the Walking Dead level in terms of becoming the most popular show on television, period. So Game of Thrones, again, those numbers are ridiculous. Power, there was no way Power could even dream of trying to compete with Game of Thrones, let alone the Video Music Awards. So I understand why they had to make that move to push it back an extra week. And remember, when the season was first scheduled to come out, the season finale was scheduled to be on August 27th. But, they thought better. Power thought better and moved it to September 3rd. What they should have did was just start the season like 3 weeks earlier and got it over with. It's not good business to have your second to last episode. There'd be 2 weeks between your second to last episode and season finale. That's just not, coming off an emotional episode where you have Raina dying, you want to continue that momentum going to the following week. So that's something for them to think better of, depending on in the future. Just start the series early. Start the show in early June. Start the show June 7th, June 8th, the first weekend in June, and go from there. There's no reason to start the show late in June or in July. That's something they'll hopefully learn from. As far as predictions for tomorrow, I have not seen any leaks. Basically stayed away from the internet from that standpoint. But I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think they're going to kill Tommy. I've read some articles based on, some of the writer of it, the writer of the particular episode says it's going to be an emotional episode. It's going to be, obviously, Ray, we know Ray is gone. But I think they're going to keep 50 Cent around. I think Dre is going to survive. I think Tommy is going to be the one that goes. I really do. I think Tommy, that's my prediction. I've been consistent with that prediction for weeks now. I think Tommy's the best character on the show. Tommy's my favorite character on the show. But I think it's gotten to a point now where, keeping him around, what's going to be his plug? I mean, it's like this mafia thing with he and his father. Is Tommy going to become a member of the mafia now? I don't understand. I'm trying to look ahead in terms of where Tommy would fit into the show moving forward, as in comparisons to Dre and some other emerging characters. So Tommy will be the one that goes, and I think people are going to hate it, but I think Tommy's the one. So we'll see what happens with the season finale of Power, that seemingly hasn't been on for a month, considering Game of Thrones and other shows as well. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, we began the program talking about Alabama and Florida State, two of the signature programs in college football, in the biggest opening season game in the history of college football, without question. Again, you give the edge to Alabama because Alabama has no team, no college football team in the last 10 years in the Nick Saban era has played in more big games than Alabama. Florida State has played in a few of them in the course of Jimbo Fisher's era, but not like Alabama, not like Nick Saban, not the amount that Alabama and Nick Saban had. And you have to get, again, you have to get an edge, coaching, big game experience to Alabama. Though I think man for man, talent for talent, Florida State is every bit as talented as Alabama. I think this will be a close game. I think Florida State will cover. The spread is 7. This will be under a touchdown game. I say this is a 3 to 5 point game late in the fourth quarter. But I would have to give the edge, even as a Florida State fan, would have to give the edge to Alabama and their big game experience. Again, the number one question to me in this game is can Florida State block Alabama? If Florida State's offensive line, which has been shaky, which was very shaky last year, if their offensive line can hold up against Alabama's pass rush, I think they win this game. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast, the Season 10 premiere. As always, you can catch the replay at blogtalkradio.com/CyrilQuinn. I will post it on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and various other forms of the social media. Have a great week. Enjoy the game. See you next time.